Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on the miraculously, fabulously, intricately woven web of the internet with AmericanFreedomRadio.com, spitting out all that nice silky goodness into your eardrum cavities. I'm broadcasting live today from my very special island chained nation paradise of New Zealand that's fluoridated, Fukushima irradiated, and is under the control of a man named John Effing Key. Effing is his given middle name. Changed it from Danger. Who used to work for the Federal Reserve and is now in charge of this country and its money supply after he made a whole lot of money off of it back in the day when he was working as Merrill Lynch's representative for derivatives trading on Wall Street. So naturally, he comes out of absolutely nowhere and becomes Prime Minister of this country. My very special guest today is L.B. Bork from PacAlliance.us. But before I go to him, I just wanted to give a few announcements. What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. Last night, I was watching this documentary. I knew it would be a propaganda documentary or whatever. Is it? What if the sea levels rose? And, you know, it's great. No science, no statistical displays, not so much as a single graph appeared during the entire one-hour documentary. Instead, it was simply digital, right? So here's the United States with its current ocean line, and here's it with a 250-foot rise, and here's it with a 6-foot rise, and here's it with a... It's like just making stuff up. What if it was 6 feet higher? What if it was 50 feet higher? What if it was 250 feet higher? What if it was 1,000? Come on. It's just ridiculous. I'm really, really sick of people. And this is another thing about the climate change lobby. climate change lobby makes them sound like the pro-gun lobby. Anyway, it was the dramatic music that really got me. It was kind of a cross between the Hills Have Eyes soundtrack with The Exorcist, you know? What if the sea levels rose 6 feet? Da, da, da! Be afraid, be very afraid. And, of course, at the very end of the documentary, you know what'll be really good? If we have a loving world government to tackle this climate change thing issue. So it's like, yep, that's what you're building up to the whole thing, wasn't it? Mm. Don't you hate that? Anyway, I'm sorry, that's completely off topic, isn't it? And I probably shouldn't have said that. But anyway, let's go to my very special guest, L.B. Bork from PacAlliance.us. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Vinny. How are you?
Somewhat fabulous, but also stressing out about a few friends of mine who are having a little bit of difficulties in their lives.
Everyone is today.
No. Mm-hmm. You betcha.
Yeah, I've been in this 20 years, and it's worse than I thought it was going to be, economy-wise.
Well, I don't know. In life, I've found that's the general rule. Everything's worse than you thought it would be.
Yeah. Sometimes things go good.
Yeah,
but
they do go good.
People.
They do go good sometimes, but not anywhere near as good as you hoped they'd be.
I suppose.
Right. Well, let's talk
ups
about
ups and downs, ins and outs, right?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Pack Alliance and who you are and what you do then, if you would kindly elaborate.
It's a sad story. As I said a minute ago, I've been in this 20 years. I got into it based on wanting to know what Second Amendment rights were back in the day. And, of course, the language of the Second Amendment and the United States Constitution seemed pretty common or, you know, easy to understand. But getting into law, I found out it wasn't, because things have drastically changed since that time. The Second Amendment's not as it appears in the Constitution. It's been changed quite a bit. But, yeah, that was my original interest back then. And soon after I got into the movement, Waco happened. I don't know if you have looked into that. I'm probably sure you have if you're in the movement. No matter when you got into it, that was a pretty much a benchmark for tyranny here in the United States. In recent times, anyway. Of course, there's been times past, but as everyone comes into the world, everyone has their own little, episode that they have to deal with. I was around when Kennedy was assassinated back in 1963, but I was only like 4 years old, I believe, at the time. So I really didn't know what was going on with that. But, mentioning that, that was the turning point for the United States as far as the last chapter and the New World Order and them really taking over putting the last chapter in place. And it's been going on for some time. People, I'm sure you're aware of that. I'm sure you've explored all that.
I was talking to with a few friends about this, and we had this discussion about what is the New World Order, who are they, and when have they been in control. And I was just like, well, you know what? I think it's the guys who wound up killing Kennedy, covering it up. They've been the ones in control ever since.
Well, for the states, or, you know, it's worldwide, and that's why I was pretty pleasantly surprised that you are from New Zealand. I thought you just moved over there. It seems like you're catering to an American audience a little bit, possibly, or is it worldwide?
It really is worldwide. I don't know about you, but when you're fighting a new world order, there's no country exempt, you know?
Oh, definitely. That's why I was happy to hear you're from New Zealand on two counts. One, I don't really appreciate people, you know, leaving the United States because they're bailing. So I'm glad you are from New Zealand. And the second point is, yeah, it is worldwide, and we need to all work together on this. And if we don't, we're done, you know. So,
yeah, I'm particularly concerned for the people of the United States and its government, because if America falls, if they take all their guns and pull it into a full-on hot police state, there really isn't any other superpower that can actually rise up against the global controllers, I think.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people, and it's nice to hear it right from the, no offense, horse's mouth, because I have heard rumors of that there's a lot of people in other countries that are depending on us to pull things out of the dumper, so to speak. So,
yeah. I'm not depending at all. I'm simply supporting, because that's what I want to see happen.
Right. Of course not. And I'm, like I said, I got into law, and I think that's where everyone should be at, because that's their Achilles heel. And they don't want us to know that, and a lot of people just ignore it totally. They can be taken aside and dealt with the law, but it's unfortunate. A lot of people have, you know, pruned that from their mind because they don't want us knowing it, and it really is their Achilles heel. So that's what I've concentrated on for 20 years. And I've seen it work. It's getting worse every day in America here, because there are so many people that have been misguided and do wrong things. And unfortunately, they're blazing the trail and leaving a mess for the people that are trying to do it right, because it leaves a bad taste in the government's mouth. I don't know. They've gotten away with too much for so long in the court systems, and there's the adversary, the hidden adversary that lurks in the background that's, trying to keep the truth from the people in government also, which is truly unfortunate because you mix that, disinformation or evilness with the inherent greed factor of most people. It's a recipe for disaster or failure. So the only thing we have right now is getting people rounded up and working together. And that's what the PAC Alliance is about. It started People's Awareness Coalition back in 1998, and it was cutting edge back then. There wasn't too much out there. There was a lot of cleaning up to do in the movement. And it's some of the same things that I've seen, for 20 years, and I've talked to people that have been in this movement longer than that. It's still floating around out there, and it's bad information, and people need to put it aside if we're to get anywhere. So anyway, the PAC Alliance deals with trying to round people up and get them to working together, be they on chemtrails or prepping, organic farming, whatever it may be, just trying to round everyone up and work as a team.
Speaking of chemtrails, this new movie with Denzel Washington that's coming out called Flight? You ever heard of this?
Is it out already?
I think it's coming. It's coming out here tomorrow, I think. And the advertisement for it is Flight, and it's got a massive plane laying a massive chemtrail.
Really?
And that's the first time I've ever seen it like that in your face before on any kind of mainstream platform. So I'm definitely going to go see it just to see if you actually have a chemtrail kind of a commentary in it. But
I don't know if they're flaunting it. The thing I like to use is called tacit flaunting. It's kind of a unspoken or silent flaunting they do with different things. But I don't think the chemtrails come out of commercial airliners. So I don't know if that's disinformation, so to speak, or just flaunting.
Well, we've had a couple of different instances here where we've had a chemtrail laid over the city. And we recognize the tail of the aircraft, like having that red Qantas tail. But then we look up on the flight tracker system that you can get on the internet here, just to see what flights are going where and everything. They're not there. And apparently, you can, if you're an operator, you can request that your aircraft don't get tracked on those international tracking sites. Mm-hmm. So whatever's going on. And here's the point about it. We just don't know.
Right.
Don't know who's doing it. We don't know how they're doing it.
That's the part. The sad part is if we were to work together on these things, I think we could get it done. But everyone's just kind of, like I say, hi. I don't know if you have basements over New Zealand, but they're hiding in the corner of their house or in their basement, not working together and attacking these things. And really, they're easy to deal with because, everyone's afraid of the government and they shouldn't be. And that's the problem. Fear is their number one tool or weapon they use against people. And ignorance, of course, goes along with that. And fear comes from ignorance.
Now, traditionally, if we're looking for unity and to strike at an enemy, we'd be talking about leadership. I mean, somebody made the point, Vinny, think about what you're saying, Unity traditionally comes through leadership. And I said, well, okay, if you don't believe that, name me a revolution or a entity or anything like that that accomplished anything without any leadership and without any organization.
So you're saying it hasn't happened without leadership?
Well, I've not seen it happen. I'd like to see some examples of it. But what happens is, I think it's either somebody rises up and just goes, "Hey, you know what? This doesn't make any sense. Everybody, look at this," and then everybody starts looking at it, unites behind them, and then straight on through. Usually, groups of leaders come together with similar principles, put aside their differences, and they have several followers each or whatever, and they come and accomplish it. What I don't like is dictatorship. What I don't like is arrogant leadership. What I don't like is people with a sense of entitlement.
Correct. And some people think I have that, but At a point, but I don't want to be a leader. I just want people doing the right things. And I, you know, what we're about is teaching people to be self-governing. And we're, you know, I'm not trying to be another leader per se, because I don't want children. You know, this is all about being, you know, independent. And I think that's what people want, but they don't know it or don't know how to go about it. So we're just here to help people, you know, get on a different path or, you know, change their paradigms. So I get upset at people because, like I was saying a few minutes ago, there's so much bad information out there that it has to be pruned out of the network to get somewhere, because it just gets people in trouble. You know, I've predicted a lot of people are going to go down, and they have. They've gone to prison. And, you know, it's sad to see that happen, because no, they're not listening. So.
Yeah, well, I think those are natural consequences of just not listening.
Well, yes. That's the problem.
Then they provide examples for others of what not to do, which is actually quite valuable when you think about it.
Sure. And I've tried to do that. I don't know how much time you spent on the PAC website. There's a few of them that I gave you last week. But, yeah, there's quite a bit of information to go through. And it takes people a couple years to really study everything, not including the book, The Red Amendment, which I had written about 12 years ago now. And it's in its fourth edition at this time. Just came out with a 2012 edition about a month or so ago.
Well, we're coming up to break in about 40 seconds. When we come back from it, I'd really like you to talk about the Red Amendment book and where people can get a copy, that kind of thing. And also, I'd like to quickly just plug the website. It's pacalliance.us, ladies and gentlemen, pacalliance.us. Kind of like the Rebel Alliance in a way. And I like the idea that you don't want to be a leader and you'd rather people be self-governing. And that strikes me as kind of the ultimate in teachers, is that they teach people that they don't need any more teachers. You know, right. teach yourself, you know, make yourself obsolete. At least that's what I really want to do as well.
Oh, I want to get back to a life, you know.
Yeah. I don't want to be responsible for all you listeners anymore, okay? I want you to know what the heck you're talking about, so I don't have to anymore. I can go back and like eat bonbons and sip tequila or something like that on my spare time. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with LB Bork from pacalliance.us.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. Can't do this all on my own. No, I know.
Welcome back,
Superman.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm no Superman, but laser beams do shoot out of my eyes if I see David Rockefeller. My very special guest is LB Bork from pacalliance.us, and we were having an interesting discussion over the break about law. And incidentally, day before yesterday, I had this meeting with a guy who's getting into the free man movement and legalese and all of that kind of stuff, and he asked me, do you know about the law? And I unequivocally answered him, absolutely not. Not meaning I don't know nothing about it. I know more than most people, but my point is, it's not possible to know all of it because there's just too much of it, and it's all BS.
I can agree with that.
So it's not
to a point.
Yeah.
We were chatting with an anarchist today on one of our Facebook groups, and I'm not an anarchist. There has to be some law, but as I said over the break to you, I respect it. It's like, you know, a bear. You don't go up and punch it in the face and expect not to get bit or, you know, killed. So you have to understand what law is about and respect it to a point. That's not saying I agree with it, because they do use it against us in our ignorance. They prey on us that way. And that's the problem with it. And it's got to be there to a point, but at a very minimalistic sense. And you mentioned that we were talking about police officers and how they've gone from serve and protect to harass and collect. I came up with that one quite a long time ago. It's something they use in America, serve and protect.
Actually, it's the other way around. It's protect and serve that they've got on the side of the police cars.
The other way around, though. So,
I saw this movie Transformers, and instead of to protect and serve, they've got and one of the Transformers is a cop car, and it says to punish and enslave. And I was like,
are they doing this to mind control everyone, or get them to buy into it, or is it? They flaunting or, you know, are telling us what's going to happen. I don't know. Mm. I think there's a lot of conditioning that goes on in movies.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of shampooing, too.
Yeah.
Of your brain.
It is.
Massage away all the independence out of it.
Yeah, it's all sad. And, it's gone bad the last 20 years for sure since I've been in this.
When did you start? Like, you started exactly 20 years ago. Like, do you remember the exact date and what it was that just kind of made you sit bolt upright in bed and was like, oh my God, I'm starting the Pack Alliance today?
No, that was 14 years ago I started Pack Alliance. But no, I got into this whatever you call movement. I try not to use that word. It's more like a constipation because it's not really going anywhere. I feel that's why I started the PAC Alliance about 3 years ago. PAC stands for People's Awareness Coalition. That's 14 years old. But the Alliance is something new. As I discussed last segment, that we're trying to get people working together of different ideologies and things. But I said at the top of the show, I was interested in Second Amendment rights, which is, rights of gun ownership in America. The American Constitution. So I started looking into those issues, and it just kind of branched out into different things. And like I said, Waco happened, and that just totally got me involved. I was even listening to Rush Limbaugh back 20 years ago. My ex-wife bought me his book, and I soon, about after 6 months or so, I figured he wasn't telling the truth to anyone. So I weaned off him and went deeper into issues. So, but then I started learning about the New World Order from Jack McClam. He had the Operation Vampire Killer 2000 out. I was introduced to that, and I was, pretty scared, being a ignorant American or in the, sheep or whatever you want to say 20 years ago, and then getting introduced to all this evil that's going on in the world was pretty much a wake-up call. But after I started learning law, which, took about 8 years to get to the point where I wrote my book, The Red Amendment, I started getting less scared. So, because like I said, ignorance breeds fear. So after I started knowing what they're all about and knowing how to handle things, it was a lot easier to swallow what was going on. And I've had students say that too, that since they started learning things that we recommend that people start looking into, they get they're less fearful and have more, I guess you would say, they have. I don't want to say it. They have hope for tomorrow instead of being all depressed about everything. So that's a good point of what we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah. I think of some people in this quote-unquote movement or stagnant I mean, it's not really a movement. It's more of an amendment, you know, something that's attempting to sort of curtail the things in the way things are going, really, which is just basically, at the end of the day, straight up tyranny. Of some kind of a satanic globalist fashion, as far as my research has led me to believe. And what's the opposite to Satanism? Seems to be Christianity. And sure. what's the difference? What's the opposite of tyranny? It's freedom. Okay. Well, in that case, if you embody a bunch of Christian principles and then you just want to be free and not be a frickin' slave, you've come almost all the way that you really need to in order to oppose such a system.
Right. And to fight it, you have to know who you are. And there's people all over the world doing that I'm aware of. It's a guy named John Wilson, I think. He's from Australia that I've run into quite a bit on the internet, but we've never talked. It seems like, you know, like we were talking about, egos clashing a little bit here and there. But I try, you know, if people think I've got a big ego, and it's because of, I know what they're generally saying is wrong, and I come across as arrogant, but really I'm pretty much down to earth with people. If they come across as not being arrogant themselves, you know, I'll treat them right, you know. And well, you know, I have to apologize. I was pretty rude to you the other night. I was in one of my bad moods dealing with the American mentality over here that day, so. I apologize for being a bit abrupt the other night when we chatted.
Well, I think when you're talking about being literal and talking about reality, it's very hard to come across real positive and bubbly.
Oh, it is.
Uh-huh.
You know, the thing that gets me is most people like to talk. I had a radio show for several years that was comp to me before the internet really started to blossom. Of course, it was on the internet, and I just got tired of talking because people just want to listen. They don't want to do anything. So I'm looking for people to get activated here and start doing things. So you can talk until the cows come home, but unless you do something, nothing's going to get done. You know.
Now, you're talking about very specific things in your book, The Red Amendment. What could you lay out a few examples of what people can do in order to free themselves or free America or free the world, you know?
Yeah, well, what you just mentioned is the tyranny that's going on in the world, and there is a definite plan. I know when we talked during the break, you're still pretty young, and you've noticed a change in the police in your few years on Earth, and it's gotten way worse, and it's because there is a plan of tyranny. And what I've surmised through research and observing what they do. And we'll get to the Red Amendment and what it's about here. But it goes back basically to the Rothschilds back in the Egyptian times and the Pharaoh system that was established way back when. And they're still in power. And basically they've gone underground and created this system. And it's all a network of an octopus of, you know, tentacles that reach all over and grasp different things in history. And basically what they've done is established the Roman Empire worldwide. And through study of law, I don't know how many people know that Rome used to be a republic before it turned into an empire. Well, basically what they've done is reestablish the empire through the United States. The British Empire still did exist. When they started their company over here called the United States of America. But even people like Thomas Jefferson was not aware of what the Jesuit order was doing through the Vatican at the time. And they were establishing Roman civil law, and they had their authors and I guess you'd call the minions established the systems, and you know, the founding fathers didn't even know what was going on because, you know, they came over from England and they were British subjects, most of them. And the Jesuits snuck in the Roman system of law here, and basically they've just rebirthed the Roman Empire through the United States, and of course the British Empire is all tied to it also. But it's pretty heavy-duty stuff. People don't want to believe it and understand it, but it's there. And basically what they've done is give corporate power via the 14th Amendment, which my book's about, the 14th Amendment, the Constitution. I don't know if you've noticed over New Zealand, but there's a lot of Lincoln talk and Civil War talk. Even Obama relates himself to being, you know, like Lincoln, or, the, you know, taking things as far as Lincoln did for a modern-day president.
Well, if he institutes a non-debt-backed currency like the greenback, then I wouldn't be too bad against it. But I don't think he's going to do that.
No, I don't know. They're not in control of the money system anyway. And I recently read something that Lincoln was, there's some falsity to the greenback system and what it was about. But Lincoln was working for the world bankers, is what I'm finding out. My research does not really entail the depths of Lincoln. And, I, you know, when I wrote my book, it was strictly based on, you know, surrounding circumstances, based on law and how they instituted the Constitution and, you know, changed things with the Civil War, which basically put the United States Republic into, you know, an empire mode, similar to the what they did with the Roman Empire. And when they did that, the corporations got extreme power. That's how they ruled over, you know, many of the provinces and things that the Roman Empire absorbed. But, the, you know, they did the same thing here in the United States, and it's being done worldwide. As hey, you well know, the United States military is all over the place in the world.
Hey, it's even being done in a galaxy far, far away. Have you seen the third installment of the Star Wars movies, where he talks about reorganizing the Republic into the first galactic empire for our safety and security? And it's like, holy cow, did this guy get... Is this guy a scriptwriter for Obama or something?
No, no, it's the New World Order. It's all what I call tacit flaunting. There's parallels there. It's talking about New World Order. Of course, they're talking about galaxies, but they haven't done that yet. So it's a whimsical look at what they've done with the world. And, you know, and same with Matrix. There's deprogrammed.us, one of our other websites, that was put up about a year, less than a year after The Matrix came out. When I saw that movie, my mouth dropped to the floor because I knew what was being said in it. Most people just think they're watching a movie, but they're really telling, you know, people how they've enslaved everyone. But there's a lot of reverse, you know, messages in that. You know, people, the Matrix all looks beautiful to the people. Of course, you know, everyone in the Matrix in real life thinks it's beautiful, but it's really not. But they made the freedom, the people that were free out of the Matrix, they made that look all ugly and dark, which it's really not. So there's some reverse psychology going on there in that movie. But it's interesting to, you know, to, it would be one of my things is to get people together that could investigate all the where the money comes from for these movies and how the scripts are written, who is involved, and you can really find out, you know, how much they do know and if they are flaunting or trying to wake people up. My opinion of the Matrix, it was the adversary, as I like to refer to them as, that put that together. Yeah. And again, they're flaunting, they're bragging, they're kind of giving you disclosure, which is a law term. They're telling you what they're doing, but they're also bragging that they're doing it to you and kind of flaunting it in front of you.
Yeah. I think that's kind of what narcissists and psychopaths really do. They love to just wave it in front of you. I can do this, and you can't do anything about it.
Right. Exactly.
We're coming to break now. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't know.
Welcome back.
Which way is going to go?
Welcome back, everybody. You are now listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is LB Bork from PacAlliance.us. He's the author of The Red Amendment, and we were talking over the break about... Oh, frack, what were we talking about? Oh, yeah, how he's twiddling around on computers all the time, and so am I, and we're both kind of sick of it. How this is you know, your work life, and it's all based at home, and it's just want to go out and get a life, you know. We don't want to be working for Uncle Scam. We don't want to be propping up the false economy like Weekend at Bernanke's. We just want to live, and the problem is we've got these impediments in our ways. It's called tyrannical scumbaggery that must be overthrown before we can even really live and be free. That's the real problem here, I find. So you don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice.
How I know that I'm a slave, because I don't have a choice.
When I got in this 20 years ago, I knew that I had to do this, and that's why I've stuck so long at, you know, I've been at it so long, is because I knew I couldn't be free unless others were free. You know, there's a lot of people that think they're so-called sovereigns or free men, but they're really still not, even though, you know, I've been out of the system for 20 years and really been totally uninvolved in it in 14, since I knew the truth about law. It took me a few years to find out what mistakes other people were making or what things they were flawed in and their, you know, positions in law. But you're still surrounded by people that are taking you down. It's like, you know, they say, I did some research on it, it's not always true, but if you jump off a ship and it's going down, you can get sucked down by the undertow, what happens when the ship finally goes down from the air that's trapped in it. But yeah, so we're going to go down with it. So I knew I couldn't have a business and not be on the hamster wheel, like, you know, giving all the money to the government unless this was fixed. So that's why I've stuck at it so long. And it just gets me upset that people won't jump on board here and try to do something about it. And just talking about it's not going to get it done. And unity is the death knell to us. A lack of unity, I should say. So it's of prime importance that people start thinking about that, putting differences aside and start working together.
Yeah, that's what I've said for a long time, LB, is it's on the points that we agree, we should come together and collaborate. Because on the points that we can disagree, we could argue about them ad infinitum. And so I think we can leave those for another time. Preferably a time when the people who do want to physically enslave and or exterminate us are defeated.
Right. You know, the only way they're going to be defeated is with their own game. That's the way I look at it. And not, they've created all the wars in the United States, for example. And there's a lot of people, I was talking to someone out in Idaho here in the States this afternoon. And they said, she said, you know, everyone's buying guns, and I go, well, that's all fine and good, but they've started all the wars here. The adversary did. Everything was orchestrated, and it's going to go the same way. All it does is cause dead people and chaos. You know, so that's really the wrong way to go. And but everyone's got their mindset on that, and it's just sad. You know, I'm not saying the guns should go away. As you said at the top of the hour, we got we're the last bastion of hope for the world in that regard, and I think it's true to a point. But we got to try to do this peacefully, because they want people gone. I think you've heard about the population reduction that the New World Orderists want. So that would fall right into their you know, their trap or their plans. And plus, Albert Pike, one of the Master Masons, who is honored in Washington, D.C., but works for the Confederate Army on their side. He was a double agent, in other words. said, you know, when he wrote Morals and Dogma, he's a master mason. He said there's going to be three world wars, using that language. Well, we've already been through two of them. So they've got a third one planned out, and we got to stop it somehow. And, you know, Jack McLaren, like I said, he's trying to wake up the police and the military people to keep that from happening. But, you know, unfortunately, no one seems to have principles. They rather have the paycheck. There's no sacrifice. And, you know, unfortunately, that's seems like most people go for the paycheck.
Well, you know, I think there's an old quote, something about patriotism, and when a patriot first strikes out to do the right thing for himself or his people or his country, he gets demonized and attacked and gets his assets stripped off right. him or whatever, or locked in jail. And only once his ideas and his actions have actually proved successful in the place and the country's going in a much better direction, do people then jump on the bandwagon, right. because then it costs nothing to be a patriot.
Right, that's Samuel Clemens, or Mark Twain, as he's known as, said that, supposedly.
Allegedly.
I got stuck with a Thomas Jefferson quote that was false. I had to go through a bunch of documents to change it last week or a couple weeks ago. So you got to be careful with the internet, because there's so much bad information out there.
Yeah. See, and I always say that don't act on anything unless you feel to yourself that it's right. You know, am I doing the right thing? Is this right? You know, and I've gotten to the point now, maybe you have, maybe you haven't, that I really don't actually know anything, because everything that I've thought I've known throughout my entire life has been proved wrong at some point.
Yeah, it can be. There's things I could say that are too mind-blowing to even think about, so I won't go there. But it's just, I will say that it's amazing we're even here on Earth. You know, people should cherish that and love each other. I have to say that, because that's what we're lacking.
Mm.
You know,
what John Lennon said. Themselves.
Yeah, John Lennon was one of their puppets, though, unfortunately.
Why did they shoot him?
I don't know. I haven't investigated that, but if you listen to, what song did I just post a couple weeks ago? It's Total Marxist, and that is their blueprint. That's another thing the Red Amendment, my book's about. It's Marxism is the blueprint for fascism, and a lot of people think Marx was a good guy. He wasn't. You know, all these people that are pushing the Marxist agenda are just pushing the blueprint for the world fascism, which is basically what they're going to eventually do. And it's written in the UN, minutes, or what they want to achieve is getting rid of constitutions of all countries, which limits the government powers. And they're going to go under corporations are going to rule everything. And that's what the 14th Amendment did in America. It gave corporations power, but they're still... they still have to do away with the constitutions to get ultimate power. And it is totalitarian dictatorships is what they're shooting for. So it's not going to be a benevolent dictatorship in the country. So people have to start learning law to thwart all this, to take care of it. And unfortunately, like I said, along with the military and police people, you know, everyone's after the paycheck, so it's not going to get done with people making paychecks, you know, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. It's going to have to be by the people, you know, you and I taking it back.
Yeah. I don't think I've got any illusions now about political ideology or the savior mentality. Nobody's going to save me. I have to save myself. No political ideology is 100% correct, because humans are inherently flawed, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why politics was really created, to kind of put people in these different flawed camps, you know? Really.
Well, that's it. So that's the whole political scheme in America. It's just Republican, Democrat, and that's it's one party, controlled.
Did not the Founding Fathers warn against the formation of political parties?
Yes, there was some, there was some talk about that. And one of the things I learned from were the Federalist Papers, which are just a blueprint for tyranny, but it does teach you a lot about what they thought. And they were Federalist, which is basically federal government compared to national government. And that's what people fail to understand, that America is comprised of many countries. You know, it's not one country, it's not one nation. That's all political newspeak under Marxism and the original constitutional system. Even they talked this way as Federalist. You know, it was newspeak, as Orson, or was it Orson Welles? No, George Orwell spoke of in his book 1984. But you know, of course, he was just talking about what was good, what was planned in 1984. It's another one of those guys that maybe knew something, or maybe was one of them. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, apparently he was in with the in crowd of England, of all the eugenicists, like what was his name, Aldous Huxley, they were all part of the in crowd of eugenicists who sort of knew what the plan was, and they were trying to warn people about what the blueprint was. And what I find interesting about 1984, it was the year that I was born, and I think to myself, you know, there's got to be some kind of deeper meaning for that. I love it. Anyway, LB Book from PacAlliance.us, thank you so much for your time today, sir. It's been pleasurable.
In a non-sexual way. Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back after the break with a new guest. Gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the island paradise of New Zealand, where even the FEMA camps have palm trees. My very special guest is Sydney Ross Singer from killerculture.com. And ladies and gentlemen, I hope you all had a WikiLeak over the break, because he's going to scare the whatever's left out of you. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Vinny. I don't think I'm going to scare people. I'm going to help them with lifestyle changes.
Yeah, definitely. Scare the hell out of them. All right. Because yeah, the first time I heard about you was actually in our mutual friend Jonathan Eisen's magazine Uncensored here. And he had an article in there about, it was in the Natural Medicine. And in fact, there's the article right there, for those of you watching on the webcam, breast cancer being caused by bras, a little article that you did that was in the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine. And I don't know, it's given me an opportunity to talk to women about their breasts without being slapped for a change. It was quite nice.
Well, did your girlfriend get rid of her bra since we did the last radio show?
For most of the time, yes, actually, except for when she's working, because she does a kind of a physical gardening job, and they'd be swinging all over the place otherwise.
Well, what does she wear at that point? Is she wearing just like nothing like an underwire push-up type tight thing, or is it more of a snug T-shirt, or you know, a sports bra, loose sports bra thing?
No, just a general bra. Hers are quite large, so it's pretty difficult to find one that fits, let alone anything that'll hold them up.
Well, that's the issue, is the fit, you know. And just from, I know it's online, our last conversation, so I don't want to be too repetitive. You know, we did talk about the study that we did and the whole thing, and for like almost 20 years now, we've been working on this one issue. And, you know, the thing is, once women get rid of the bra, it's usually a one-way thing for them. They don't want to put them back on if they've really were able to go all the way. But I understand with a large-breasted woman, she would want something like a man to wear a jock strap if he needed some support when he was doing particular athletic activities. But if you take it off right afterwards, you don't have to worry about the constriction, which is the whole issue of these garments, is that they're constrictive. You know, how does she feel since she stopped? Did she feel any changes in her breast health? Because I assume she's wearing it less than before.
I honestly can't tell you. I mean, in terms of a difference for you, I honestly don't know. Okay. But as soon as she gets home from work every day, off it comes.
Yeah. Well, so a lot of women if they had cysts before, the cysts go away, and that's the cysts were caused by the constriction. It doesn't allow the lymphatic fluids in the breast to drain out. Most of it drains up to the armpit lymph nodes, and the bra cuts that off by pushing the breast in and pushing it up or whatever, changing the shape. And that pushing on the breast is what cuts off in this lymphatic drainage. So the fluid accumulates in the breast tissue, and the breast eventually cysts form, which is where that fluid collects. Some women actually have to go and get needle aspirations of those cysts. They go to the doctor like several times a year, and they stick a needle right into their breast and suck out the fluid. And then these women find the fluid comes back, of course, and over time it gets fibrous as scar tissue fills in. So that's fibrocystic breast disease, and that's considered normal in our modern societies where women wear bras. It's a normal thing. And if they don't question the bra because it's such a culturally accepted product and behavior,
Hold on a second. I recall that there was a feminist movement once where burning the bra was actually part of the protest. What happened to that?
Well, you know, I think what happened was they were doing it for a statement of the, like, subjugation of women to men, and the breasts are in bondage and women are in bondage with bras. I don't think they understood that it was actually hurting their health. And I think what happened was I think the women didn't like the idea that getting rid of their bras was attracting even more attention to their breasts. And the whole thing is a very difficult issue for women, even feminists. And today, a lot of feminists understand this message, but still others are still in denial because, like Ms. Magazine never wanted to pick up on this, and we were ignored by women's groups when our research first came out. They're so defensive. Women are very defensive about their breasts, and they need a bra to achieve the shape that this culture prescribes. And if they don't, if they're more natural and they fear that they're not going to be acceptable, and then they use that for their own advantage. I mean, women are not just victims. They'll use it. And it's all part of this cultural game. And the problem is when you squeeze the breasts, you're going to make them sick. You're going to cause disease, ultimately cancer. And it's a very simple understanding of the process and physiology, but it's a very difficult thing to implement in a culture where, for example, look at the Super Bowl yesterday. I don't normally watch the Super Bowl, but I happened to be at somebody's house and they were watching it, and I saw the Beyonce and her performance. And, you know, I'm not a prude by any means, but I didn't find it. I think our culture has this two models for men and women that is really hurting us. It's women are whores and men are warriors. And that's what women see. And I was seeing these girls applauding this leather lingerie seductress on stage, gyrating and so forth. And I was with a family that actually had some very traditional values. And I was feeling that they must be shocked by this because fortunately the kids weren't in the room. But it was a very provocative performance. And I live out in the boonies here in Hawaii. I don't watch media typically, and I don't see that culture often. I don't, you know, watch TV, and I rarely ever look at – I never look at Super Bowl. It's just not my thing, and I avoid that. But when I do see it, the cultural problems just shoot up at me because I'm sensitized. I'm not desensitized like people get. And it was really – it's shocking. I think the values – and I was thinking to myself, okay, as Beyonce is basically – modeling lingerie, and I'm trying to show that lingerie is killing women because it's all body shaping underwear and clothing alters physiology, and the corsets are even coming back, which is really unfortunate. I think with so many obese people, they feel like they need to try to keep make their shape look slimmer, and they're using corsets and girdles. I mean, this type of shapewear hasn't gone away, and we know that killed people. And you know, you can't circulate, you can't breathe, organs get distorted, bones actually get deformed. I mean, it's terrible. But people just, you know, they think more. It's more important to conform to these societal norms and look good, in quotes, than to live up to the needs of health and be natural. Of course, there are a lot of people that see through it and are natural and healthy. And those are the people that, you know, have been bra-free all their lives. And when I do these types of radio shows, they'll call in and say, you know, he's right. I'm 60-something years old. I've never worn a bra. I've never had breast problems at all. And my breasts are firm and healthy, and they're the envy of every woman I know. I look like a woman in her 30s and or 20s. I mean, their breasts are very healthy and firm, and it's all because they never wore a bra. So it's there's a segment of the population, and I think people are now, women are catching on, and I think this information from shows like yours, and I've done a lot of media this last year trying to get the word out again about all of this, it's really helping. I think people are hearing it. And you know, the American Cancer Society, I just read, is doing a lifestyle study for cancer. I hope they include the bra in their study, because up until now, and I doubt they will, but I hope they do. Up until now, they have been deliberately ignoring this and saying it doesn't deserve any consideration. It should just be ignored.
How much money does the lingerie industry make every year? I mean, roughly.
Wow. It's multiple billions, multiples of billions. I believe in Canada alone, it was like about $7 billion. And, it, you know, it's a big industry worldwide. It's like cigarettes, it's tobacco. And think of how many women there are, and they're all wearing bras. They have multiple bras. And they're not all. I mean, they were starting to get more bra-free women, more than when we started our study. But on the other side, a lot of women are now wearing them 24/7. When we came out with our study that's in my book, Dressed to Kill, which I recommend people read. It's very important. It describes our study, our research into this that showed bra-free women have the same incidence as a man, okay? So it's as they wear the bra tighter and longer, their rates of breast cancer shoot up. But their incidence of breast cancer is about the same as a man if they're bra-free. And we did this study, and so when we came out with this 20 years ago, people were not sleeping in their bras as much. It was like kind of rare. And we would mention this, and they would say, who would sleep in their bra? I mean, that sounds so uncomfortable. But a few years back, the bra industry has been really pushing so hard, and they sell their bras as somehow preventing droop. And women have been brainwashed into thinking that, you know, if I wear a bra, my breasts won't droop. And of course, that's completely not true. That their mothers will attest to, and go to any, you know, you'll see women, it's aging, it's going to droop anyway. It's an aging process of the breast. The bra doesn't prevent it, and in fact, the bras accelerate the droop, because what happens is you're holding up the breasts artificially, and the internal suspensory ligaments in the breast tissue atrophy under lack of use. They just aren't being used. It's like if you put your arm in a sling, your muscles will weaken and wither away because you're not supporting your shoulder the right way in your arms.
So, if you put a calf in a stall, and you want to make veal out of it, you prevent it from moving and it becomes nice and tender.
Exactly. Well, in the case with breasts, they become more droopy. And it's really, they also get bigger from swelling. They're swelling with tissue, with fluid, because of the constriction that they have on their breasts every day. You got to understand, there's a lot of things that are diseases caused by progressive chronic lifestyle problems, so that if you do it for one day, it's not going to kill you, okay? You might not even feel it that much. But when you do it for 20 to 30 years, you know, you start, like with the bra situation, you start at like 10, 12, early puberty, you know, the earlier you start, the worse it is, and that's known. And that's because you're taking a little kid and you start wrapping their breasts automatically as soon as they start developing. And you do, you know, by 20 years of that, you're going to, the breasts are not even going to develop properly. You're putting them in a pressure bandage as the soft tissue is supposed to develop. So we are creating, like the Chinese created distorted feet by taking little kids and leaving their feet in tight shoes. And as they grew, their feet stayed small, and they did this finding.
I had a Japanese girlfriend once, and her little toe was was turned horizontal because of wearing little pointed shoes.
Right, that's interesting. Well, they would actually rot off in these women, and they would be wrapped every day. Their man would unwrap them and wash their feet for them. It was like this erotic thing. Even the smell would be erotic. I mean, humans could eroticize just about anything. And this went on for centuries. So it wasn't a secret that it was damaging and destroying feet. But, you know, so that's why that's really the problem. People are pretty self-destructive, and giving them the answer doesn't always make them do the right thing. That was a real shocker to me. You know, you think you give the truth, and people just accept it. And
I think it's hold on. So I think it's actually the opposite way around. People don't change things because they've been given the answer. People change things because they've formed the question.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate on that?
If they're asking the right questions, then they'll start to seek the answers themselves. If the answers are given to them without them even needing to question it, it's very hit and miss. They need to have the motivation to want the answers in the first place.
They want the answers to diseases like breast cancer. They want that answer, but they don't want this answer. That's the thing. They want a different answer. They want a pill or a vaccine or something like that. They don't.
You see, and the appropriate question is, should somebody else have done all this research and done all this perfecting and so I can live my life without actually really having to learn anything or do anything or suffer at all in order to improve myself? No. Solving your life's problems, regardless of whether or not they're mental problems, health problems, career problems, aren't solved by other people solving your problem for you or by purchasing a new thing.
That's right. Well, you know, and I do try to lead people to the answers on my website, Self Study Center, and killerculture.com. There's a lot of choices we're giving people on how to change your lifestyle. We explain to them how different lifestyles are affecting your health. And these are answers that are really not promoted at all by the chemical industry and typical medicine, because lifestyle changes are free. You know, you just stop buying something or stop doing something and let your body heal. And once you see the connection, it's basically just up to you to have the strength and determination to make changes that sometimes might be countercultural. Like if you are in some very conservative community and you feel like you have to look a certain way, or you have a certain job and you have to look a certain way. I mean, it's really sad to me when I hear women tell me that they can't go out without a bra. It's like they're slaves. They cannot go out without a bra. And if they go to work, they cannot be there without, and a lot of it is in their head. Very few businesses will have a specific policy, but they feel like they're going to be ostracized, criticized, ridiculed, looked at, and they'll be so uncomfortable that there is no way they can allow themselves to do this. And sometimes they feel like their boss will come over to them and say, this is unprofessional, you must have a bra. So to change that cultural thing, because the bra has become such, you know, so accepted, it's difficult to change. And we have these institutionalized cancer charities that are making so much money. The whole pink business with breast cancer and the Komen Foundation and the American Cancer Society, and you know, they are, there's a reason that they're not going to look into the bra issue unless they're forced to by pressure from somebody somewhere in the company.
Well, the New Zealand Breast Cancer Society's, every time I see those campaigns every year, you know, it's a two-pronged thing to me. On the one hand, I get really angry because, A1, they're not telling you what's really causing the breast cancer in the first place. And on the other hand, they're suckering people in to donate money, which they're just giving to these massive evil pharmaceutical industries that just cause more cancer than they solve. We'll be right back with Sydney Ross Singer from KillerCulture.com.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that literally has been everywhere, man. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. There are even people listening to this show from behind the Great Firewall of China. My very special guest from KillerCulture.com is Sydney Ross Singer. And we're going to be talking about sleeping for this segment. And then in the next segment, we'll be talking about a slightly more taboo topics like going to the bathroom and holding in farts and such, which will be great. A nice quick splash of that. So, Sid, without further ado, let's talk about sleep.
Let's talk about sleep. I'm going to bring in a prop. This is one of our lambs that we... Since we're talking about sleep, you should be counting your sheep, right? So, we live on a farm with it's an interspecies community. Actually, we don't exploit any animals, and these are our lawnmowers. And this mom, actually, her mom had six lambs in one go, six. So she rejected a couple. They only have two teats, so they can't nurse everybody. So we took we nursed them, and anyway. So I thought she would. She wanted to come on and say hi. And I wanted to talk about sleep because we did some very important research on sleep. And if it has to do, I can't do it with the lamb in my lap. So I'm going to have to put her down now. But I have
very, very thirsty looking creature there.
They're really sweet.
Give me that nibble.
Well, okay. So what we...
lambs are very sweet, especially with garlic and rosemary.
Well, the way I wanted to get into this is I wanted to tell you the history of why I got into this. I was very concerned about migraines because I had a family member who was suffering from them. And one day when I was... sleeping, I got up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, and as I sat up real quick, my head sort of got light. You know, I was, you know, sleeping from a sleeping position. I sat up real quick to go to the bathroom, and upon standing, you know, I almost felt like I was going to faint, and that's called orthostatic hypotension, and it's common. Right, and that just means you get low blood pressure upon standing up, and that's because as soon as you raise your head, you, from a lying down position, the blood gets pulled down by gravity from your brain, and the heart pumping up resisted by gravity. Now, when you were lying flat, the heart was pumping right into the head, and there was no gravity pulling it down or resisting the pump. So the heartbeat actually and your blood pressure goes down at night, because if it's too high, it can blow a blood vessel in your head because your head's sort of getting pressurized. As you lift, so the heart, and there's pressure receptors in your carotids, in your carotid arteries in your neck. So when you're lying down and they get too much pressure, they give feedback to the heart, and that causes the heart to slow down and stop beating so hard. So as soon as you stand up, if it's too quick, the blood doesn't get to your head very well, and you get lightheaded. And then the heart starts pounding, and your pressure comes up, and then you feel good again, right?
Is that in some way the reason why men wake up in the morning with an erection for the same reason?
That's a different,
Okay, moving on.
But it's a good question. I'm glad you're thinking. So the thing to do is, this really let me realize was that the head elevation was an issue with gravity being an issue in brain circulation, which actually I found out NASA scientists are researching, because in space there's zero gravity. And in zero gravity, fluid shifts to the head, and these astronauts get ear problems with fluid in their ears, in the inner ear. They get glaucoma with extra pressure in their eyes. Sinuses get, clogged. The whole brain, their memory, their thought functions can be affected, balance. So all of this, the brain gets pressurized. So they simulate that on Earth by having people lie flat. And they show, the head gets pressurized, and they try to mitigate that because astronauts need to deal with that. You can kill somebody if they're head down, like, for 24 hours. Their brains will just get so pressurized. And as it's doing that, it's also not circulating. So it uses up the sugar and oxygen that the cells would normally feed off of, and it's like sitting in its own waste, and it's just getting congested. You don't want your brain to get congested because it's controlling a lot of all your bodily functions. It's a modulator of everything, and the central nervous system. So we figured what is happening with migraines. We had a theory about this. Since gravity is important, if people would sleep with their head slightly elevated, actually NASA found out 30 degrees head elevation. Like if you're the middle of your bed up to your head from your waist up was about a 30 degree elevation, that would be optimal for both heart and brain circulation. They prefer that because there you have flow. The gravity resists the flow in and assists the flow out, and the heart pumps appropriately, and the brain also auto-regulates its circulation. But there's a flow. Gravity helps with the circulation. If it's too low, your veins start sticking out, you're backing up fluid, and your head's just getting pressurized. So we found that when people slept this way, it got rid of migraines, because what happens in a migraine is that the blood vessels in the neck open up to basically flush your head when it's too congested. And it's in the morning because you've been down all night and your head's been getting pressurized. And sometimes in certain positions, it's even worse. I'll go into that in a second, the different sleep positions. But when your head is low, your whole brain pressure is going up, eye pressure, sinuses are congested, you get baggy eyes, your whole face, gums, everything is basically getting puffy. Just like if you stand too long all day, at the end of the day, your feet are puffy. What actually happens is because of gravity, your whole body's fluids are shifting downward as you're standing. And by the end of the day, your feet and legs are puffier, and you actually have low pressure in your head. That can give some people a low pressure headache. When you lie down, that feels better if it's a low pressure headache, because now you're starting to repressurize. And that's why people need to lie down and put their head down. That's why it's so uncomfortable in airplanes where you can't lean back enough. Your head's too high. And when you sleep, you really want to be lower down to get brain pressure. You do want some brain pressure to compensate for the loss of pressure when you're vertical. And I'm not telling you anything, by the way, this is stuff that's really known. But it's known in a field of space research. That's a subspecialty in medicine that doesn't talk to the rest of medicine. But the rest of medicine knows about head elevation, too. That's why hospital beds are elevated or elevatable. They're adjustable. And after a head injury with trauma or – go ahead. You want to say something?
Well, how could I elevate my own bed? I was just thinking about how to retrofit it, because we got a slat bed, right? And maybe instead of having quite so many pillows on the top, you actually put some pillows underneath the head part of it or something like that, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, you could do it with pillows. There's a lot of ways. You can use wedges, which you can buy, these foam wedges, but they're pretty high. Like, they're about 30 degrees. I think about a 15 degree would be a good enough elevation. You'll feel something right away. If you have a bed frame, you have a frame with legs on it, like metal?
A wooden frame with wooden slats.
Okay, but it has legs, four legs that you could...
Yeah.
Put like some blocks under the legs at the head of the bed, make a full incline plane. About 6 inches, a couple of big old dictionaries under each leg at the front of the bed. So the foot of the bed is still lower. And then put pillows under your feet and buttocks area. So you're like putting your legs up, your knees are a little bent, and stay on your back. And that's a very important thing. You have to be on your back, because if you look at your, what happens is if you sleep on your side, you're leaning, whatever side you're on, you're leaning on everything there. So sometimes if you side sleep, you wake up with a numb arm because you cut off the blood supply and impinged on the nerve, and you know then it starts tingling, but it's like dead for a little while. You can't even move it, and slowly the circulation comes in. Well, you know, leaning on your body year after year causes a lot of compression injuries. If you lean on your face in the pillow, what happens is your nose will start to bend over time away from the pillow. You'll see people with asymmetric faces with one eye that's a little slanted down more than the other. The whole cheek, you know, it'll be more if they're a side sleeper on whatever side. If they're a belly sleeper, they have to turn their head to the side. And as soon as you turn your head to the side, you cut off on the drainage of the veins, because it pushes into the muscle and you increase brain pressure. They've measured this by putting electrodes in people's brains. When you turn your head to the side, it increases brain pressure. That's why they tell you for babies to have them on their back, because people were putting them like on their belly with their head to the side, and their brain pressure goes way high, and it causes what I'm talking about, which is cerebral edema. You're getting fluid accumulation in the brain, and that caused sudden infant death syndrome, because, you know, your respiratory center is in there. So, by the way, they already know that this is good for sleep apnea. Speaking of respiratory centers, sleep apnea is a respiratory problem. And they have already shown in research that you can treat sleep apnea by head of bed elevation, 30-degree elevation. That treats that. It's also good for acid reflux because, you know, if you had a meal in your belly and you go to sleep, if you're a belly sleeper, right? First of all, you can't even open up your ribs to breathe, and you're pushing right on your stomach, which is going to push some of the fluid up your esophagus, and you're going to give yourself acid reflux. And that's not so, you know, that, and you know, so you can imagine the problems. You're leaning on your organs. Women who are all day constricting them, then at night they lean on a breast, and you know, if they're a right or left side sleeper, they'll lean on one breast over the other, which will make the breast change shape compared to the other, and I think is why we have breast asymmetries, and might also explain why they get breast cancer in one breast more than the other, because they create these asymmetries with sleep position.
Mm. Well, see, I'm always amazed at just how little people know about virtually everything. I mean, people probably think that apnea is something you download onto your iPhone.
Well, sleep apnea, okay, maybe I should have explained what that is. Is that what you're saying? It's a condition in which people wake up thousands of times a night gasping for air because they stop breathing. Their respiratory center, that pacemaker of your breathing that you don't have to think, breathe in, breathe out, you don't do that. It's automatic. That pacemaker doesn't work in these people at night, and they wake up gasping for breath because they go into an overdrive defense mechanism because they're suffocating. And then they wake up slightly and they go back to sleep, and they wake up and they go through these cycles all through the night, and it ruins their sleep, needless to say, but it's not good for their health. And why is this happening? Well, medicine will put tubes down their throat to keep them breathing and open the airways and maybe do surgery. I mean, but they found that if you raise the bed, they sleep better. The tongue doesn't go down your throat the same way if you're on your back raised. It should be like in a hammock. If you were in a hammock, your head is up and your feet are up. And that's the way a lot of traditional people slept. They didn't sleep on a floor where bugs and reptiles and other things can hurt them. They didn't sleep I'm speaking of cultures where you're more in touch with nature. You weren't assured of 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep where you could be unconscious and dead to the world, right? You'd have to be able to get up and respond to things. So you'd want to be on your back, both ears open, both eyes straight ahead, that you can see. You're not like smashed with your face and your eyes shut. And when I find that, you'll find if you try this tonight, tomorrow when you wake up, your head will be clearer in the morning, because your whole brain is just foggy from being congested all night, not getting good circulation and pressurized, okay? And your sinuses are also getting pressurized. They won't be in the morning. You won't have the same bags under your eyes. Although, if you already stretched out your skin, don't expect that to go away immediately. But you'll discover you won't have these puffy, baggy eye mornings anymore. And they will slowly tone up. Your whole body does when you stop these insults. You'll also have... people discover they can sleep. When they wake up, they're like immediately awake. And if you are prone to having migraines, they stop. We did a study on 100 people and who were migraineurs, and 70% of them, these were lifetime migraineurs, 70% of them got rid of the migraines by raising their bed. But I want to just give one – oh, I also think, by the way, this is the cause of Alzheimer's, because what's happening is the – or at least a cause of Alzheimer's, let me say. The ventricles of the brain, which are these cavities inside the brain in which cerebral spinal fluid circulates, those in a person with Alzheimer's are stretched out and expanded. So these cavities are huge, pushing the brain tissue against the skull. So you basically, the whole brain is getting pressurized from within, and little plaques form of dead brain tissue in different places, depending upon how your brain is getting pressurized. Now, that's known about Alzheimer's. Also, your blood-brain barrier that normally keeps, when the blood goes into the brain to make cerebral spinal fluid, the tissues there that the capillaries that it oozes out of is selective. It doesn't allow just everything into your brain. And it protects the brain tissue. That's called the blood-brain barrier. But if these vessels are chronically expanded for hours, a third of your life in bed, and then when you're up and around, you might be sitting, which doesn't increase your, which is not the same as standing. I mean, sitting increases brain pressure versus standing because it lets the blood circulate better down. I mean, it's a real simple mechanical issue. But what I'm saying, so if you chronically have these expanded blood vessels in your brain, the blood-brain barrier is not going to work properly. So, because the spaces between the cells lining these blood vessels are going to be stretched. So these things will be able to get in, damaging the blood vessel lining. So people are more likely to get...
Well, hold on, Sydney, we'll just come to a break here. Now, unfortunately, we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, and we're going to touch on a few taboo health topics that may be a little bit difficult for some people to take in. So if you do not have a strong stomach or are a bit squeamish, you might want to turn off this radio broadcast. In fact, I don't know why the hell you'd be listening to it in the first place. We'll be right back.
Bonkers.
In my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let E give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back. Oh yeah, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's my final segment here with my very special guest, Sydney Ross Singer from KillerCulture.com, who's one of the visionaries who also incidentally created Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. I'm just joking. Speaking of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, we're going to be talking about some taboo topics, which are usually banned under FCC regulations. We're not going to be using any bad language or anything, but you know, some of those bodily functions that we've all got going on, which seem to be natural, and we think we shouldn't be doing them around other people. You know, I remember when I'm going around sometimes and I really badly need to take a wiki leak. You know, when you're driving or something, and people go, "Vinny, you know, just hold it until we go to a bathroom." And I go, "A bathroom? Look, I'm a man. The world is my urinal. Just stop anywhere, whip it out, and it's done." You know, you know, what are people worried about? You know, I don't get anyway. So. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Vinny. That was a great intro. Actually, what I was going to talk about is what happens when we can't go to the bathroom when you need to, and is it good to hold it in? And the fact is, it causes a whole bunch of diseases. But like you say, in our society today, it's very hard to find an opportunity to go to the bathroom. You could be driving on the freeway, and you're stuck in traffic. And you know, you gotta go, and your bladder is just bursting, and or you might have to defecate, and you just are like holding it in. Well, you know, that's modern life, and we're taught to do that early on with diaper training, and we're taught to try to hold it in and wait for toilet training. Actually, in the diaper training, we teach the kids to go in their diapers, and then we try to teach them not to go in their pants anymore and stop and go in the toilet. But we have to manage our excretions for our for the cultural requirements that we have. A lot of people don't like using public toilets either, which are available like in schools or in public places. So it's another inconvenience of going to the bathroom. Well, what happens if you hold it in? Well, think about your bladder and where that is and what happens when you hold in urine. Urine is a salty solution. And when you hold it in, it starts to concentrate under the pressure. And as you take a salt solution and concentrate it, what do you form? You form crystals. So kidneys, bladder stones can be caused by just holding in your urine. And over time, doing this as a habit. A reason for holding in urine, another one is you might live in a house where it's cold at night in the wintertime, or you don't want to get out of bed, and you just try to hold in your bladder as long as you can, see if you can make it to the morning, see if you can make it to the next thing. You know, I'm just trying to have people think about in their lifetimes, in their lifestyles, how often they choose to hold it in. So if that's your typical way of dealing with needing to urinate, then you're asking for bladder infections as well as stones, because when you stretch the lining of the bladder and irritate it with this concentrated urine, you're going to be irritating the mucous membranes. That's going to allow other things to pass into them. That's like your first line of defense is down because it's irritated. And so you're more likely to get bladder infections. And also, if the bladder is really full, the kidney can't drip down into it anymore from its passive drip process. So it'll prevent the kidneys from properly filtering eventually. And you'll start getting toxic from holding in your urine.
Speaking of which, I know a couple of people are doing urine therapy. They're drinking their own wee, and one of them wound up starting to get kind of a rash or something around his mouth. And I was just like, dude, your body's getting rid of it for a reason, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
Is that like some kind of a big myth that people are doing, you know, urine therapy, or is there some weight to it?
Some weight to it?
Choice of words.
Well, now they're also using... a stool therapy. You know, they're actually, for some bowel problems, they're giving people other people's stool, like a turd. And they'll insert the turd into this person so that the probiotics inside the turd will provide... I'm not making this up. This is in the news. This is regular medicine doing this type of thing. They probably charge you a lot for it, too. You could probably get a lot of donors, though, but that's another story. But when it comes
to... This is like the human centipede all over again. Dear goodness.
Okay. Let me get back to the bladder for a second, because there's something I wanted to mention that men should know about, which is prostate enlargement. If you look at the anatomy of the body, the bladder is sitting right above the prostate, and if the bladder is large and heavy, it's going to be pushing on the prostate. And the prostate's known to thicken itself to withstand pressure. So you're going to get an enlarged prostate if you hold in your urine all the time. And it's also, by the way, interestingly, it's more of a problem for affluent cultures and higher socioeconomic people. People who don't have opportunities to go to the bathroom as much, like lecturers or doctors or people who are in cars a lot, bus drivers. There's a lot of professions where they just don't get good bathroom breaks. And they, as occupations, they have higher rates of these types of problems. And to pivot to holding in, you asked me about, let me get back to your question, is drinking your urine a good idea? Well, I personally don't, it doesn't make sense to me. I don't think I agree with you. It's an excretory function, and I don't see the benefit of that. But, placebo effect being what it is, some people might feel a benefit from doing anything. So I don't know, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm sure people will say, oh, I swear by it. There are a lot of people who believe in that, but I guess it has to be your thing. But let's get to exactly. Let's get to what happens when you don't go to the bathroom, you don't defecate and you hold that in. And more worse than that, what happens when you hold in the need to pass wind, to fart? And everybody is in that situation. You're in a social position situation, and you don't want to fart. You hold it in, and it can get very painful trying to hold in a fart. And the reason it's painful is the pressure of that contract, of that gas wanting to come out and you holding that in, that pressure goes into the wall of your colon, which is basically like a big balloon. And suddenly a little bubble forms in that wall, and that's called a diverticulum. And the diverticulum is, that's what it just means. It's a little pocket. And you develop, if these pockets, having them is a condition called diverticulosis, which a lot of people have. A lot of people, like more than half. And then diverticulitis, as they get older especially. Diverticulitis is when these get infected, because as you can imagine, in your colon, if you have little pockets, stuff can get in these pockets, you know, the fecal matter, that could then fester, and you could start getting infections. So that's very painful and very dangerous, okay? And it's a serious condition that threatens a lot of people. So what you want to do is don't hold it in. You need to let it out. Let the pressure out. It's either fart or blow up, but that's your choice. But it's much better to have it. There's some...
Is there a similar principle with belching as well?
I don't think people get... No, I don't think it's the same exact thing, but you certainly would want to let yourself belch. Yeah, I wouldn't want to hold that in, but I don't think you'd get diverticula in your stomach. I don't know what would happen if you held in your burps. You probably get some gas pains. Your stomach will just build up like gas. It needs to vent. I mean, we got a lot of gas going inside. We have this fermentation going inside our bodies. We have trillions of microorganisms that are feeding us, that we're feeding. You know, people don't think about that, but you know, when you think about a ruminant like a cow, they're eating the bacteria inside their rumen is digesting the grass and helping, and then they digest what these bacteria are producing and absorb that, and the bacteria helping them break down the grass. Well, in our case, you know, our bacteria aid with digestion. All these probiotics that we have in us, they aid with digestion and make less stress on our own pancreas for digestive enzymes. If you have the enzymes are in the food and the bacteria in your gut is helping break this stuff down. And, you know, so we work with a cultivated garden of bacteria in our bodies. And these sometimes get out of balance and they produce gases as they ferment things and we have to vent them. That's just the way it is. But when the culture makes that an uncomfortable process, then we hold it in to the detriment of our health, because it's, you know, so that's typical of a culturogenic disease. It's the kind of thing that it's built into the way you do things, and it seems really countercultural to just be natural in that moment, whether it's the way you look or even the way you sleep, because natural sleeping would be more in a hammock with the head up and the feet up. I mean, that's even what orangutans do when they sleep from boughs inside trees. They make themselves a hammock. And so these are just living more naturally, but our culture is just conditioning us to be uncomfortable with those natural setups, especially with taboo stuff. There's a lot more taboo subjects, but I think people can go to my website at killerculture.com. I have a lot of good information, articles that I've written on this, and we help people with self-studies. We're actually changing our website. We're upgrading the whole thing, but you're still going to point to the same stuff, but we're making a whole new thing. We want to make it... See, we give people self-studies to do where we basically identify a problem you might have. Let's say migraines or sleep apnea or breast cysts or something. And you go to this site, we'll tell you why you're having the problem and what lifestyle change to try. And then you just try it and see if it makes you feel better, and we help you out with the process. So that's killerculture.com.
All right. Sydney Ross Singer from killerculture.com, thank you very much for your time today, sir. It's been enlightening and allowed for the release of some good information and guesses. We'll be right back. We'll see you again sometime, and we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, very soon. Thank you very much for listening.